the Chief Judge and the Judges of the United States Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals. Hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before the United States Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals draw near, for the court is now in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Please be seated. Court is called to order. Court calls the case of United States versus Major Joseph W. Hugh, miscellaneous docket number 2016-11. Under Article 62 UCMJ, the government presents the following issue for our consideration: whether the military judge abused his discretion in finding that AFI 90-507's prohibition of ingesting hemp seeds is overly broad, serves no valid military purpose, and lacks sufficient nexus between military necessity and the ingestion of hemp seeds. Government counsel, do you wish to reserve time for rebuttal?
Yes, Chief Judge. 5 minutes, please.
Very well. You may proceed.
Thank you. Chief Judge Drew, Honorable Court, may it please the Court. I am Major Jeremy Gaiman, together with Colonel Catherine Oler, we represent the United States in this case. In this case, the military judge erred when he found that AFI 90-507's prohibition of the ingestion of hemp seeds was overly broad, served no valid military purpose, and did not have a sufficient nexus between military necessity and the duty the AFI sought to impose. The lawfulness of an order is a question of law. This court reviews de novo. I'd like to talk a little bit about, first, that there is a valid military purpose for this AFI, and the AFI is not overbroad because it is reasonably related to a military purpose, and the Air Force is not required to use a least restrictive means when drafting its order. Additionally, I'd like to discuss waiver as it applies to lawfulness and raising the issue of lawfulness of an order at the trial level. There is a military nexus in this case. Hemp seeds, whether washed or unwashed, contain THC, which is a Schedule I controlled substance. Unwashed hemp seeds contain higher levels of THC, enough to cause an individual to test positive on an Air Force drug testing program. You can see that in the record at page 351. You cannot distinguish, an individual cannot distinguish between washed and unwashed seeds. Hemp is a heavily regulated, at least federally, product. However, though, it's available in a wide variety of markets that's not processed like the DEA requires it. Canada, overseas, in Asia, and Europe. And it's also available in the United States because many states in the United States have legalized marijuana. In fact, they sell products either at dispensaries or well commercially in these states that have legalized marijuana. In fact, in some states, you can grow your own marijuana. Items containing this THC in these states are sold commercially as well as in these dispensaries. Now, the military has an interest in prohibiting members from ingesting a Schedule I controlled drug, THC. It is a psychotropic drug. And the Air Force has no control over states where marijuana is legal, over DEA regulations, over Europe, over Asia or Canada, where these seeds can be purchased. The Air Force has an interest in making sure individuals do not test positive for having THC in their system, to avoid false positive, to avoid hemp seed defenses at courts-martial when enforcing the drug testing program, to protect its mission, its readiness, protect airmen, and to provide clarity with regard to what substances out there contain Schedule I controlled drugs.
Counsel, let me interrupt you. We're here on an Article 62 appeal rather than a direct appeal, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. So what is the role of the findings of fact to the resolution of this case?
Your Honor, findings of fact, this court looks to the military judge's finding of fact unless they are clearly erroneous.
All right. And is it necessary for the government to prevail on appeal? Is it necessary for this court to find any of the facts found by the military judge to be clearly erroneous? And I know you've made an argument that there's aspects that are clearly erroneous. My question is a little bit different, which is it necessary for the government to prevail for us to find that the military judge made a finding of fact that was clearly erroneous?
Your Honor, there are two that come to mind, and I don't know if it is necessary, Your Honor, but I'd say that it's important. One is it looks to that purchasing, the judge was dismissive of the ability to purchase seeds, unwashed hemp seeds or different seeds in the United States. It did not address thoroughly the fact that states had legalized hemp seeds and that they were commercially available and also sold in dispensaries, and then they're easily distributed from those dispensaries, which are all facts were on the record. The military didn't address them, but readily dismissed them in saying that it was unreasonable to think that an individual could come across these unlawful seeds. And clearly it's not unlawful because Appellate Exhibit 28, as well as discussed in, 31, as well as discussed in the affidavit that was attached to this record through a motion to attach from Dr. Taylor, talked about how the state of Washington had legalized marijuana, and there were many products being sold from the state of Washington that contained varying levels of THC. So obviously the commercial availability in states that have legalized it is much more prevalent than the military judge gave credence to in his ruling.
Thank you.
Another one, Your Honor, would be that the military judge in his in deciding what the purpose of the AFI or the purpose of the AFI focused solely on the fact that that it was the intent of the order to solely prevent interference with the drug testing program. And that was not the sole purpose of the AFI, to prevent interference with the drug testing program. And you can see the purpose of the drug testing program both in the AFI language itself, which is clear, as well as the memorandum from Brigadier General Miller.
Is that problematic for the government? Let's assume that the judge was absolutely correct, that that was the sole purpose.
No, Your Honor, it's not problematic for the government, but it was a narrow view of the purpose of the AFI. And when looking at the whether or not the order is reasonably connected, you look to the military purpose, obviously. So you need to make sure that you're clear what the military purpose is in that regard.
But, counsel, doesn't the AFI specifically say that that's the reason for the prohibition?
No, Your Honor. The AFI states that the Air Force is aware that there are varying levels of THC and that THC, the compound, is detectable. It's not worried about the fact whether or not it is detectable. It's stating that THC is a drug that is detectable by the Air Force's drug testing program. Its concern in AFI was focusing on the fact that there are varying levels of THC in these products.
And you talked a little bit about order, and presumably a lot of the case law deals with whether or not an order is a lawful order. Here we're talking about a willful dereliction of duty. I think both the government as well as the defense have said, as at least as I read it, is that there's not a meaningful distinction for purposes of our analysis, that we're talking about a dereliction of duty case as opposed to a violation of an order. In other words, the duty still has to be a military duty that has a sufficient nexus. Would you agree with that, or do you think there's somehow a different analysis since we're talking about a dereliction of duty?
Your Honor, I would say the difference between dereliction of duty and then an AFI or a general order in this case, there's no distinction in the analysis there as far as it coming, because the dereliction arises from an order, some kind of duty, which could be a statute, an order, a custom of the service. And so you're looking at a general order in this case and analyzing whether that general order that created the duty is a lawful general order.
All right. Can you distinguish some of the no alcohol order cases? That certainly is an area where the courts have historically seemed to take a more critical view of the orders and have required a greater nexus to show that an order to say you can't drink alcohol has to be specifically connected to some meaningful military purpose. How would you distinguish those cases as it applies to here?
Yes, Your Honor. And I'd first like to say that that kind of in a big picture here is whether or not is what we're talking about here. We're not talking about a constitutional privilege here. So alcohol is one of those, is an oddity, I think, because there's a constitutional amendment that talks about basically your rights regarding alcohol because of prohibition and overruling prohibition. So I would think that alcohol is maybe perhaps looked at a little bit differently than you would your ability to consume hemp seeds. In this case, we're talking about hemp seeds. We're not talking about religion or free speech, which require a greater levels of scrutiny. We're talking about the ability to consume a substance that contains a Schedule I controlled substance. So I haven't seen much distinction drawn in the cases, Your Honor, but I think that that's a fact that should at least enter this court's mind when looking at this level, is what kind of scrutiny you give this case when you're talking about consuming hemp seeds, consuming food, which is not a constitutional right. If this is just basically, it's not protected. It's not a protected class by any means.
All right, you're not saying that the right to drink alcohol is some constitutional right, though, are you?
No, Your Honor, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying that alcohol seems to maybe fall into something a little bit different because it is actually mentioned in the Constitution, unlike hemp seeds. But originally the court started off with cases like Wilson saying that alcohol could be banned, orders banning use of alcohol were unlawful because they're too broad. But then from that, the court starts changing some of its decisions and starts looking a little bit more specifically at the language. You have a case, the case of Blyle, which was cited in our brief, 37 MJ 92, was cited, by the defense. And that case was interesting because the court found that it was proper for a commander to, in order to accuse, not to consume alcohol. And to the extent they overruled, they overruled Wilson, which was the case that stated that orders not to consume alcohol are unlawful. And they found that it was okay for a commander to do that because it was part of it fit within the reasonable necessity of the military purpose. And a lot of this had to do with the accused being on, he was in confinement, pretrial confinement, then released from pretrial confinement on some kind of pretrial restriction, and the order was a part of that pretrial restriction. And an important point the court made there was that CAF found it was okay. Part of the analysis was because that prisoners don't get to drink. And so pretrial restriction is not, ordering not somebody not to drink on pretrial restriction is not an unduly burdensome thing. And I think that language is interesting in light of this case, is because individuals don't have a right to consume THC, a Schedule I controlled drug. So putting an order so that you cannot consume hemp seed, which contains, even properly processed ones and trying to reduce the level, still contains measurable amounts of THC, it's not unduly burdensome. So borrowing that language from Blyle, this is exactly identical to this situation, is they don't have a right, just like prisoners don't have a right to consume alcohol, people in America don't have a right to, airmen don't have a right to consume Schedule I controlled drugs. So putting a ban on a substance that contains it is not unduly burdensome, therefore not overbroad. A lot of the other alcohol cases had to do with whether the order was just too broad in general terms. It didn't have a definite ending point. It didn't clarify whether it was on duty or off duty. It didn't clarify whether it was one drink or two drinks, or whether it was at a pub or not at a pub. And those factual distinctions were very important.
Counsel, going to your argument on the alcohol issue, well, there might be a constitutional right to consume alcohol, just like there isn't, in this case, a constitutional right to consume a strong and kind bar. Isn't the effect kind of the same, though? Somebody could go to an off-base store, purchase this legally. It's not, the product itself is not illegal, and they certainly could purchase it legally, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So the prohibition here, because I think part of the argument on the part of the appellee is that this, and part of the judge's position was, is that the order itself was overbroad because it affected those commercially available products.
And that's a good question, Your Honor. And the kind of the answer to that is just because it maybe captures, just because the order captures some products that are legal to consume, doesn't mean that the order itself is overbroad just because it captures that. Language used in Dumford, by our superior court, they stated that the order was not so broadly overdrawn as to warrant invalidating the order. So in other words, it can be broad, it just can't be so broadly overdrawn. as well as this court in Spencer used the language, if it's too broadly restrictive. So in other words, it can be broadly restrictive, it just can't be too broadly restrictive, and you're looking at the reasonableness of it. And the problem with hemp seeds specifically is that it's because of the anomalous nature of the seed. You can take some hemp seeds and sprinkle it into a Kind bar or into yogurt, but when you're talking about trying to control a substance that's regulated by the DEA, that some states have legalized, that you can access in Europe and Asia, just because you can basically pare down the amount of THC by using it as an ingredient amongst other substances doesn't make that substance okay to consume. So, I mean, if you're looking at stopping the ingestion of hemp seeds, you have to assume like some individual could sit down with a bag of hemp seeds and just spoon it into their mouth as opposed to eating a Kind bar, which has a few hemp seeds in it. But it's, in other words, just we're not banning the product, we're banning the seed. And just because you ingest a small amount of the product doesn't mean we can't ban the product because you've diluted the product so to say that it's, well, it's legal now and it's not going to have an impact on you. And that gets into, honestly, that gets into a policy discussion then of how much of an illegal substance is it okay for an individual to consume. Like, it's not going to have an impact on you if you just dip your finger in an illegal drug, pick your drug, and put it on your tongue. You're not, you know, it's not going to have any impact, right? So why is it illegal to do that? That's a policy consideration. And consuming THC in the Air Force, we have a zero tolerance, dare I say, drug policy, but the Air Force has an ability to regulate controlled substances being consumed by its military members.
And you may have already addressed this, but if not, I'll give you a second shot at it. But what's the standard? When we talk about whether or not a regulation or a duty or an order is overbroad, how should a judge analyze an order that would be, or a duty that would be over permissibly broad versus one that would be impermissibly overbroad? And sort of my premise on that is generally if you're talking about an Air Force instruction, or a duty that applies to the Air Force as a whole, almost by definition, it's going to be broader than necessary to address whatever the concern is. I mean, there may be a lot of individuals that are impacted by, for example, let's say a curfew that would not otherwise get into problems or have any other issues, but the duty is a very broad duty to reach a particular goal. So what makes something impermissibly overbroad by permissibly broad?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's, honestly, the distinction in the language in a lot of the cases has not really been drilled down as to that question. However, though, you can see through a lot of the cases, the language used in determining whether something is overbroad, you look to the military purpose of it, and it's the reasonably in furtherance of military needs. The language used in a lot of these cases is reasonableness, whether or not it's reasonable. So it's not, if you're looking at, you know, constitutional law, you have, you know, the strict scrutiny, intermediate scrutiny, then like a rational basis. We're not even at rational basis. We're purely at reasonableness. Is it reasonably related or reasonably in furtherance? You can see that, and Spencer uses that language, and they're citing to Wine, a case called Wine in that case. And additionally, the Air Force does not have to use the least restrictive means. You see this language kind of mirrored in some of the Supreme Court cases, federal cases that talk about, you know, looking at a statute, whether those statutes are overbroad or overbroad doctrine. In the case Huey, which was an order regarding the financial regulations, and the court used this language. They stated, the lawfulness does not depend on showing that the command selected the best possible management tool. And it goes on to say, or choose the least restrictive alternative in terms of impact on the individual service member. So in other words, when talking about overbroad, it just has to be reasonably related to the military needs, the military purpose, and they don't have to choose the least restrictive means.
Now, the judge in his findings of fact, and where he seemed to focus on, was his concern about commercially available hemp products that are sold within the United States subject to FDA approval and oversight. Now, the AFI instruction does not focus on whether or not something's commercially available or not. It just says products made with hemp seed generally. So it could be anywhere. The AFI could put in an exception saying that, hey, generally, products made with hemp seed, you may not ingest. However, if they're commercially available in the United States and FDA approves it, then you are permitted to do that. And that would certainly answer the judge's concern and the findings of fact that are before us that suggest that the real issue is these commercially available products.
Your Honor, while it's possible the Air Force could draft a regulation, one, they're not required to because they don't have to use the least restrictive means. The other part of that, though, is that that doesn't really answer the question because commercially available, how do you define that then? Especially when you have constant change to state law, and the Air Force can't control what a state does or what a state sells. And indeed, the experts testified about the ability to go into to go and purchase marijuana items containing THC in these dispensaries, as well as being commercially available in those states, and that individual could test positive by consuming those products. So the Air Force can't control what states do, and then defining what commercially available, because commercially available means commercially available in that state as well. So that's when we're looking at, you know, whether it's overbroad as far as the least restrictive means, and the Air Force doesn't need to do that, especially because of the anomalous nature and, honestly, the nature of marijuana in general being that there's conflict between federal law and state law now at this point.
Well, and on that point, as more and more states now make not only medical marijuana legal, but recreational marijuana legal, there are certainly people calling for the federal government to lift the federal ban on marijuana. Let's assume for the moment that the federal government were to do exactly that. What impact, if any, would that have on the Air Force's ability to continue to ban the use of marijuana or marijuana products by military members?
If the military felt that it had a military purpose in banning marijuana because it felt that marijuana as a psychotropic drug could have an impact on mission readiness and our ability to focus on our mission, our good order and discipline, then the Air Force could issue an order banning service members from consuming marijuana, even if the federal government allows it.
Well, and the UCMJ itself, for marijuana, would, again, if the feds took marijuana off the schedules, would that impact the prohibition of the UCMJ for consumption of marijuana?
Your Honor, I have to look at Article 112A to see how it's listed. I believe marijuana might be listed individually rather than through the Schedule 1, so I don't think it would impact our regulation. But the greater question would be, can the Air Force continue to ban marijuana even if the federal government doesn't? And the answer to that is absolutely. All it needs is a military purpose, and they would have one since it's marijuana as a psychotropic drug.
Let me ask a hypothetical to you. One thing that the military judge mentioned in his ruling, and that us being around the Air Force have certainly heard, which is poppy seeds and the potential for ingestion of a large amount of poppy seeds resulting in a positive in a urinalysis, under the urinalysis test. Could the Air Force establish a duty, do you think, a lawful military duty that people in the military are prohibited from eating products with poppy seeds in them?
Your Honor, as a lot of those facts weren't necessarily developed in the record on whether or not the military would have a purpose in banning that or whether poppy seeds are as prevalent as marijuana is in this country, I'd have to see those facts before that to be able to answer that question. And those discussions on the record, Your Honor, by the military judge and by some of the experts are kind of a red herring. How the Air Force, what drugs the Air Force chooses to ban or finds a military need to ban or to put regulations on is a policy consideration for the Air Force and not really a question to a point to be able to argue that, well, you didn't do it in this case, so obviously this is unreasonable. So I consider a lot of those discussions of the record be kind of a red herring because that's a policy consideration, not whether or not an order is lawful or unlawful as it relates to banning a particular Schedule I controlled substance.
Let me go back. There's one other thing I wanted to give you an opportunity. I know your time is starting to run short, but I would like to hear your take on this. The timing of when the motion to dismiss was raised in this case was unique. It was the motion to dismiss was raised after the appellee was found guilty. Can you address whether or not the military judge had the discretion to entertain this motion? And if he had the discretion, whether or not he similarly had the ability to say, no, I'm not going to consider it?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's the question of whether or not waiver applies. And I'd say generally I think this court should answer the question of whether the issue of waiver as it applies to deciding the lawfulness of an order. This has kind of got a mixed history in military cases. All the cases cited in our brief specifically, I highlighted some of them as well. Some military courts choose to apply waiver and some don't. So it's kind of a mixed question. I think it gets down to a mixed question because of they tie it to failing to state an offense, which can always be raised. But this is not failing to state an offense, because the test for and the analysis for deciding whether something fails to state an offense, you look, are all the elements listed? Is the accused on notice of what he has to defend against, and does it protect him from double jeopardy? And the court specifically, our Superior Court specifically held and knew that lawfulness of an order.
You may finish your.
Thank you, Your Honor. Lawfulness of an order is not an essential element. It is a separate decision by the military judge to decide. It is not an essential element. And so that automatically takes it out of the analysis of whether it's failure to state an offense, because it's not part of the analysis for failure to state an offense. Is a separate determination, which is why waiver can be applied. And specifically under the specific facts of this case, it should have been. The military judge did not have discretion in this case to grant waiver because he specifically found that it should have been raised earlier. He stated on the record that when the government objected to the timeliness, he stated, I see no reason why this should have been raised. It was easily seeable. It should have been raised earlier. In other words, he found there was no good cause for raising this motion in untimely fashion. Therefore, he did not have discretion to grant it because there was no good cause to bring this up untimely.
Isn't this potentially an issue of, rather than failure to state a defense, of legal sufficiency? And under RCM 917, a motion for finding of not guilty, really based on legal sufficiency, can be raised at any time, can it? And I know that the judge did not enter in a finding specifically under 917 of guilty. But my question just really is kind of determining what is this that he did. How would you react to this being him just determining that it was a legally insufficient specification?
Because when you're looking at legal sufficiency, again, you're looking to the elements of the offense. You're looking to the elements of the actual offense. And this is not an essential element. CAF has specifically stated this is not an essential element. So therefore, in looking at legal sufficiency, that's all tied to elements of the offense and whether the government has raised the evidence of that. Again, the government doesn't have to raise evidence of the lawfulness of the order in the trial because it's not to be a question for the members to consider. It's for the military judge to determine ahead of time. And the facts of this case are specifically egregious because the accused used the existence of the AFI, in other words, that second charge, to acquit himself of the use of marijuana. By arguing on the record, through the cross-examination of the government expert at page 210 of the record, that using butter or oil containing hemp oil can make you test positive, and stating specifically on page 211 that the Air Force has a reason for this instruction, a reason for the instruction of banning hemp seeds. And that's why specifically in this case, Your Honor, a waiver should apply to the situation, both generally and specifically. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Billy's counsel, you're up.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Judge, honorable members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Annie Morgan, and along with Mr. David Sheldon, we represent Major Joseph Pugh. The question before this court is whether the military judge abused his discretion in dismissing the additional charge and specification after finding that the underlying order was unlawful. The standard of review to be applied in this case is an abuse of discretion. The abuse of discretion standard calls for more than a mere difference of opinion. The challenge action must be arbitrary, clearly unreasonable, or clearly erroneous. A military judge's ruling on a motion to dismiss shall not be overturned unless his findings of fact are clearly erroneous or his decision was guided by an erroneous understanding of the law. Deference must be given to the military judge's decision, and all evidence must be viewed in the light most favorable to Major Pugh. In this case, dismissal was within the military judge's range of options. United States v. Gore states that a military judge has a wide range of options and will not be reversed so long as his decision remains within that range. Not only was the military judge's decision to dismiss the additional charge and specification within his options, but once he found the underlying order to be unlawful, it was the judge's only option. RCM 907b1b states that a charge or specification shall be dismissed at any stage if the specification fails to state an offense. Waiver is inapplicable here. United States v. Griffith, 27 MJ 42 CMA 1988, is the controlling case. According to the court in Griffith, even after the trial has ended, the military judge is empowered to dismiss a finding of guilty where the proof is legally insufficient. In Griffith, the trial judge's failure to recognize this power was error. This court recognized Griffith in a published decision regarding a military judge's ability to supplement the record after trial in United States v. Catano last year. This court in Catano cited the Supreme Court in United States v. Dieter, recognizing that a trial judge's power to correct any alleged errors, the trial judge is empowered to correct any alleged errors in order to eliminate an unnecessary backlog of appellate review. If there was error in this case, it was the military judge's failure to make a determination of lawfulness prior to submitting the case to the members. United States v. New, as cited by counsel, tells us that lawfulness is not an element. It's a question of law and not a question to be submitted to the members. The military judge had a sua sponte obligation to correct this error. Lawfulness of an order is not waivable based on the plain language of RCM 905 and 907. Even if this court were to find that the military judge did not have an independent obligation, neither waiver nor forfeiture is appropriate. RCM 907B1B lists non-waivable grounds for dismissal and includes a failure to state an offense. In their brief, the government relied on Hawkins to stand for the proposition that somehow this is a waivable question. However, the greater weight of case law states that a failure to state an offense is not subject to waiver. And I would direct this court to United States v. Hilton, a CMA case from 1989. In that case, the CMA remanded the case to the CCA because the Superior Court found that it was error to apply waiver.
Counsel, so all right, let me ask you then. So what was the basis for the judge's ruling? Is it failure to state an offense? Is it legal sufficiency? Is it, he granted the motion to dismiss, but at different points in his ruling, he sort of dismisses the idea that it's a failure to state an offense, and at other times he seems to suggest that maybe it is a failure to state an offense. What do you think the judge was doing? What was the basis for his ruling?
Your Honor, when you look to the analysis that the military judge conducted with counsel, he references both failure to state an offense as well as the fact that this would affect the legal sufficiency. And ultimately, these concepts are interrelated because of the unique way the government elected to charge this. Addressing it under the failure to state an offense initially, the judge was correct that if one of the proposed elements was in fact unlawful, then this would fail to state an offense. However, that is also a determination that would affect the legal sufficiency of the specification.
So this was raised after the members returned a finding of guilty as to this specification. Would the judge have had the discretion to not to effectively say too late, you waited too long, And I'm not going to let you put on additional evidence as to the lawfulness of this particular duty.
Your Honor, under Griffith, no. The judge in Griffith, the issue was raised as an ineffective assistance of counsel based on the defense's failure to do exactly that, to bring this motion to the judge's attention. And our Superior Court held that the military judge, in not exercising his discretionary authority, or I'm sorry, his non-discretionary authority to dismiss a legally insufficient specification, had erred. Something to note about the defense's motion, during the argument, government counsel asserted that the government, that the military judge found that there was no good cause. And that's in fact not entirely true, and I would direct this court to the record. On page 367 of the record, the judge engaged in a colloquy with trial counsel about whether or not this was in fact subject to waiver. Although the military judge expressed some frustration or expressed empathy to the frustration that prosecution might have felt, his discussion about the fact that this was non-waivable established the good cause to hear the motion under 905E. This court is bound by the military judge's findings of fact. The findings of fact of this case are not clearly erroneous. They are, in fact, fairly supported in the record. And to the extent the government challenges the military judge's finding, these challenges are based on the government's disagreement as to a discrete number of factual points. However, that is not the test. The test is not whether the government or even this court were to disagree with the military judge. The fact is whether each and every fact found by the military judge is fairly supported in the record.
All right, and so I want to ask you something about that, and I'm going to focus a little bit on the actual findings of fact. Didn't the judge actually find as facts that it was theoretically possible that Kind Snacks could experience some kind of failure in its manufacturing process that would lead to the inclusion of unwashed and unprocessed hemp seeds, and that it was theoretically possible that would result in a false positive? I mean, that's a finding of fact the military judge found, correct?
That is correct, right. Your Honor.
Also found that it was theoretically possible that a person could purchase a locally legal product while overseas that could contain unprocessed hemp seed. Also found it was theoretically possible that an airman could order a hemp product over the internet containing hemp seeds that would otherwise be illegal, but that could have THC. So I guess my question is, in the findings of fact, the judge did effectively say, yeah, there's a risk. I just think the risk isn't terribly great. Doesn't that kind of come to, the military judge found what the rationale tie was, and it almost seems to come to a policy sort of decision as to whether or not that particular risk is enough to justify banning ingestion of that substance. Why is this not a policy decision? And the judge overstepped his bounds in saying that these reasons were not good enough reasons.
Your Honor, I would draw this court's attention to the decisions in both Womack and Deesher, which require that there be a fact-specific determination. Deesher says effectively that the specific facts must relate to the specific mandate. And so it was first appropriate for the military judge to consider each one of these scenarios, because after finding that the defense had rebutted the presumption of lawfulness, it was incumbent upon the military judge to analyze whether there existed a sufficient factual basis to determine that the order was in fact lawful. And relying on the evidence in the record, there were three potential bases that the government turned to. First, that an airman might serve overseas and therefore be exposed to unregulated products, that the FDA might fail, or that someone may order it on the internet. And so the military judge, in considering the evidence that the government presented during both the motion and the reconsideration motion, analyzed whether these issues were theoretically possible, but then more importantly, whether there was a factual basis established in the record to find that the regulation was lawful.
Who has the burden?
On 62, Your Honor, or?
No, at the trial level. We talk about you've got a regulation, and the judge is saying it's theoretically possible, but I don't see any evidence in the record So how does a judge resolve that situation when you talk about whether or not a duty is a lawful duty?
Your Honor, United States Huey answers, Huey answers that question. The defense bears the initial burden to rebut the presumption of lawfulness, and that occurred at I apologize, the page number's escaping me at this point, but that occurred immediately following the defense's motion, following the finding of guilty, where the military judge asked defense, what evidence can you now present to me to rebut the presumption of lawfulness? And the defense went ahead and adopted the testimony of Dr. Turner and then called Dr. Taylor. Once there has been a rebuttal of that presumption of lawfulness, Deischer stands for the proposition that the court must make a must determine if there is an adequate factual basis in the record to support lawfulness. And at that point, it became incumbent upon the government to present some evidence that this was there was a valid military nexus, that this order was not, in fact, overbroad. And they failed to do that, Your Honor. The military judge applied the correct law. And the rebutting of the presumption, Your Honor, occurred at pages 340 and 341 in the record. And in fact, we know the judge applied the right law because the parties at trial agreed to the judge's analysis. Prior to conducting the post-trial hearing, the military judge summarized his analysis, and that occurs on pages 415 to 416, and trial counsel agreed. In fact, the senior trial counsel in the case stated, "The crux of the government's concern is not that the court relied on the wrong law or that the wrong legal analysis in dealing with the issue, but that there is additional evidence that the government could provide." Now, Your Honor, I would point out two things. First, there is a concession by the government that this is the appropriate law and the appropriate legal analysis. Second, I would point to the fact that we know the military judge's findings of fact were not clearly erroneous, at least going into that post-trial 39A session, because the government had the opportunity to rebut any findings of fact the military judge had made in that initial ruling. And the government chose not to do so, which is at the minimum strong evidence that the government agreed with the military judge's findings of fact to that point. Now, we know that the government presented additional evidence at that post-trial 39A session, and that the military judge considered that evidence because he modified three paragraphs in his initial ruling and added approximately seven paragraphs to his second ruling, and found that the evidence presented by the government not only did not establish an adequate factual basis, but it in fact strengthened his initial ruling.
Now, in this particular case, the military judge he did not go down the road of saying that the military duty, as applied in this particular case, led him to a particular result. He instead said the AFI provision in its entirety is invalid because it's overbroad, and the AFI provision 116 is not sufficiently tied to a military duty. And my question for you is, what's the impact of our decision in this case going forward?
Your Honor, it's of limited impact. While the military judge found that the AFI was unlawful because it failed to connect to a specific military duty, he made that conclusion on very narrow grounds, which is that this AFI prohibited the consumption of commercially available legal and regulated food products. Essentially, what we're talking about in this case is the ability to eat a candy bar that a military member has bought at the shop at.
All right, so you foresee, you see this as being a very factually specific sort of situation, but you foresee then that this AFI provision, based on how it's litigated at trial, will be a valid military duty in some court-martials, and some judges will make a determination that it is not about military duty. It seems bizarre to me that that effectively what we're opening it up to is, hey, is this valid? Is this a valid military duty? Depends on what judge you get. Depends on what courtroom you go into. I mean, is that the answer? Is that Who knows? We'll just have to see at any given day how the judge, how the government chooses to prove this up.
And, Your Honor, I think to speculate as to what will occur in other court martials is somewhat beyond the this court's concern with an Article 62 appeal. We're simply looking at whether his motion to dismiss was an abuse of discretion and whether it was guided by an erroneous view of the law. However, understanding that there could be additional challenges, at least as much as this court, as this AFI provision relates to the consumption of legal food products domestically produced subject to FDA regulation, appellee's position is that that is an unlawful position or an unlawful provision. And it's important to point out here that the government is in effect taking two diametrically opposed views. And the military judge points to this in his ruling, that the substantial part of the government's case at trial was based on putting on a case that proved beyond a reasonable doubt that this could not cause a positive test. The consumption of Kind bars, of Chobani yogurt, of these specific commercially produced food products could not cause that positive result. And is now, and I can point to at least three places in the record where trial counsel themselves calls the notion that this could be a cause a positive test unreasonable.
Well, I mean, and it's not necessary for you to go into that, but the defense also did the exact same thing, right? Because when they were litigating the wrongful use of marijuana charge, they were attempting to raise the possibility that these products could have resulted in this in it being positive. And then after they successfully won, then they successfully won and got the acquittal as to the wrongful marijuana use, was convicted of the dereliction of duty, then they flip sides completely and go, there's no way it could have been. So in other words, what's the value of the government made a couple of different arguments? How does that help this court in resolving this issue?
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree with the characterization that the defense used this to their advantage. The defense put on an innocent ingestion defense and actually focused on the consumption of edibles in popcorn, foodstuffs from a farmer's market. It was not the defense who put in the appellee's statement as Prosecution Exhibit 2, nor was it the defense who argued in opening or in closing that this, in fact, was unreasonable. And so earlier, Your Honor, you had actually asked a question about an unlawful order and what constitutes overbroad. And this is an important point, because an overbroad order, among other things, is one that is unreasonable or arbitrary. And so it's important to note that in as early as the 404B motion, but also through opening and then again in closing, it is trial counsel that specifically uses the word, this is unreasonable. This could not cause a positive test. It is unreasonable to believe that anyone who consumed even 10,000 gallons of Chobani yogurt or hundreds of Kind bars could ever test positive. It is now the government who is forced to accept that on appeal when they are attempting to argue that this is somehow reasonably related to the stated purpose of the AFI. And the stated purpose of the AFI is essentially to prevent the unlawful interference with the drug testing program or any kind of incidental interference with the drug testing program. And that's we know that because of the AFI itself. We know that because of the representation of counsel on page 31 of the government's brief. And we know that because of the affidavit provided by the AFMOA commander who is concerned about false positives.
Is that a problem? Do you see that, let's assume that is the sole basis for this provision in the AFI. I understand we're only talking about a particular provision in a broader AFI. Is that problematic in your view, that the basis was to protect the integrity of the drug testing program by preventing, quote, false positives?
Your Honor, under the specific facts of this case, it's not problematic, but it's very important because that specific fact of whether or not this could interfere with the drug testing program was inconsistent with the facts presented to the military judge during the motion hearing and during the post-trial 39A session. At page 351 of the record of trial, the military judge, in fact, asked Dr. Taylor, could this be detected by the drug testing program? And Dr. Taylor's answer was, no, this is below the detection of the GCMS equipment that is used by the Air Force in their drug testing program. And that went unrebutted by the government's expert, Dr. Nutter, who testified during the Article 39A, that she didn't know, but it was unlikely that this would cause any interference with the drug testing program. So when you look at what the government specifically charged in this case, they are bound by that AFI, they're bound by the express purpose of that AFI, and based on the facts that came out at trial, this is not rationally connected.
Well, it seemed that, again, it wasn't entirely clear from the record, but it seemed that when this provision was initially contemplated and put in the AFI, there was at least a belief that, and I think, in fact, it came from the fact that it had come up in prior court-martial settings, that there was a belief that hemp products could, in fact, cause a false positive. And then at trial, the expert said, oh, well, you know, we used to believe that, but now we don't believe that, or our science is more exact or whatever. Let's assume for the moment that's kind of the scenario, that at the time an AFI is written, the science is such that, yes, it would legitimately cause problems with our then-existing drug testing methodology, and that by the time we get to trial, either our drug testing methodology has changed, it's more specific, or we realize that, well, you know, our studies were not as accurate as they thought they would be, such that maybe something that was scientifically valid when written, but at time of trial, there's the science has undermined that. Do you see that as a problem? Do you see a situation in which an AFI, when published, might be perfectly valid, have a support of perfectly legitimate military purpose, but by the time we get to trial, because of increases in science, that very same valid AFI can become invalid?
Your Honor, I believe that is, in fact, a fair representation of what occurred in this case, and that's specifically why Deesher and Womack talked to us about looking at a fact-specific determination. So while this may not have been a motion, while the military judge may have been well within his rights to deny this motion 20 years ago, which is what those early studies are talking about, the 90s and the 2000s, as we refine in the Holler, the AFIP study in 2003, and then the AFIP study in 2008, it becomes necessary to take a more critical look at this regulation that maybe once was valid but is no longer.
In a somewhat related vein, you mentioned at one point that one of the important factors here is that in the case of the kind bars, or the specific type of strong kind bars, that they're, quote, commercially available, meaning that they're lawful to purchase and, at least in some areas, to consume. Is that necessarily dispositive? Because currently in this country, in certain states, at least under state law, it is lawful to consume without a medical basis or medical need marijuana, THC. We're not even just talking hemp seeds. We're talking straight up marijuana. The fact that that's, quote, commercially available in places like Colorado, would that undermine the Air Force's ability to nevertheless prohibit Air Force members from using such products?
Well, Your Honor, marijuana specifically, no, that is not problematic. And the reason why is we're not simply looking at commercially produced. We're just looking at things that are subject to FDA regulations. And Dr. Taylor addresses that in his final affidavit that he submits to the court, talking about the FDA letter or the FDA warning letters, and that they're actually irrelevant because, yes, while these things are commercially available, they're not subject to FDA regulation. And the military judge specifically tied his ruling to those things that are subject to FDA and DEA regulation. As far as whether or not the legality of marijuana in certain states would remain criminalized or is properly criminalized, we have 112 alpha for that. And military members are still prohibited under 112 alpha from the knowing and wrongful ingestion of even certain products which are legal based on state law.
Would you believe this would be a valid, based on the evidence as presented in this case, would you believe this would be a valid military duty if the instruction instead said the ingestion of non-commercial products containing or products derived from hemp seed or hemp seed oil is prohibited? In other words, if it limited it to this overseas scenario or to non-commercially available would that, based on the evidence and the findings of fact that this judge had, would that be a sufficient military duty, do you believe?
Your Honor, I think there are several ways this could be modified to accept out essentially the candy bar and the shop at scenario, the commercially available FDA products. I think there's also a potential to modify this based on the overseas environment. If an airman is stationed in a country where this is unregulated, then different prohibitions attach. So I would agree that there are a number of ways that this could be narrowly tailored to avoid the unlawful problem that we faced here, the problem of unlawfulness that we faced here.
So it seems, although you didn't specifically answer it this way, is that it seems as though you're conceding that there is a concern out there in certain circumstances, but just not as it applies to commercially available hemp seed products purchased in the United States.
Your Honor, I believe that would be consistent with the military judge's ruling, and that would be fair. Now, there perhaps would be other concerns about looking at the arbitrary nature by which we regulate hemp seeds as opposed to, say, poppy seeds, which contain a higher level of morphine, and that may be a different challenge for a different day. But this challenge is specifically tailored to commercially available FDA-regulated foodstuff.
Wouldn't it be a potential, since we're talking here, this is not a specific order targeted to this individual. Instead, it is a duty that is established for the entire military as a whole. Isn't there a valid purpose for the military in making the duties they send to everyone else very easily understandable so that they can provide one simple and easy to understand rule? There won't be confusion about what an individual is supposed to do or not supposed to do. So isn't it possible the Air Force said, hey, we understand that this is going to include some stuff that won't result in positive, but we wanted to make it really easy. Hey, if it says hemp seed, don't eat it. I don't care if you're overseas. And this, it seems to me that there potentially could be a value because it's a lot easier to train people what their duty is, a lot easier for them to understand. If there was a legitimate basis for this and a subset, couldn't there also be a reason that you would actually have it a little bit more broadly?
Well, Your Honor, the question isn't whether the military has any conceivable purpose or this is in any way conceivably related. There's still a requirement that this has to be a narrowly tailored mandate. And so, although there...
Where do you get that there's a requirement that it be a narrowly tailored mandate? And I ask that question because the government argued that there's not a requirement that it be narrowly tailored, that they can be broad in their approach.
And, Your Honor, that would come from 92.1 and discussing the ability to regulate private rights and personal affairs, that it cannot occur without a specific and narrow military duty.
I want to go back to a point that Judge Brown raised earlier. I want to make sure I understand your argument. So even though this was raised as a failure to state an offense when the motion was presented after findings by the defense, was it your answer to his question earlier that the judge could have said, was it your answer that he couldn't have said, I think this is raised too late because you're really raising the issue of the lawfulness of the order because I think you've already waived that. Was it your answer that you couldn't have done that?
And, Your Honor, I notice my time is going low. May I answer?
Yeah, please answer.
Your Honor, the military judge would have discretion to deny a motion based on untimeliness. Now, whether or not that would allow the motion to be reviewed, say, at an appellate level and not subject to waiver is a different question. However, appellee's contention is that the military judge, in fact, erred in not deciding the issue of lawfulness of this regulation prior to sending it to the members for their decision. And you know that because when you look at page 300, the instructions in the case, the military judge does not instruct on lawfulness. In fact, he only instructs on the three elements of the offense and then their related definitions. And so under Griffith, the military judge would have had an obligation to correct that error once it was brought to his attention.
And when was it brought to his attention?
Your Honor, there's at least some indication that the military judge was aware of this as early as the 404B motion. On pages 17 and 18, the trial counsel asserts that the kind bar is a distraction, it's not reasonable, and the military judge asked the question of, so you're essentially rebutting your own theory of criminality. So the military judge had an obligation, what was on notice, and had an obligation to instruct properly as to both the elements and also the legality of the regulation that was charged prior to submitting the question to the members.
Okay, I guess your time has expired, but I do want to make sure you have enough time to fully answer this line of questioning. But I'm a little confused now. You're stating that the issue of lawfulness is not one to be put to the members. That's a matter of law for the military judge to decide on and not included as an element or something like that that the members would have to decide. But that you're saying that he should have decided that matter before submitting the case to the members or that particular offense to the members. My question is it your view that in any case involving a military duty that without a motion from either side, that the military judge is obligated to affirmatively on the record make a finding that the given order is lawful, and then only if he's, you know, and then present it to the members? Or is it by virtue of the fact that he presented the case to the members that we can take from that he must have concluded, at least as of that point, that it was a lawful order, otherwise he would not have presented it to the members?
Your Honor, taking it out of the specific facts of this case and applying that to the general proposition of trial practice, there is a presumption of lawfulness for general orders, and it is incumbent upon the defense to rebut that presumption. However, in this case, under the specific facts of this case, it's at least apparent from the record that the military judge had some questions about the manner in which the government had elected to charge and try this case, and that comes out early in the 404B motion, but then most specifically comes out during the testimony of the government's expert on findings, where the government expert testifies that there is no way that a kind bar could cause a positive test, it's unreasonable, this individual could have eaten hundreds and hundreds of kind bars, he could have eaten a kind bar every single day of the week for a month preceding the test, and it would not cause a positive test. And so the facts of this case, the military judge is still obligated to apply the law to the facts as they come out in trial. Well,
and again, I recognize your time is up, but this I think is an important point. Let's assume for the moment, as a matter of law, a kind bar could never cause a positive result. This AFI doesn't specifically say you can't, you know, that kind bars are forbidden. It's broader than that, and I mean that's part of the issue, is it overbroad. It talks about hemp seed products. If we accept the fact that you can eat 1,000 kind bars and never be positive, does that necessarily mean that the provision in the AFI that says you cannot consume any hemp seed products is unlawful? That is not a lawful order or lawful duty?
Your Honor, yes, because the government's bound by the stated purpose of the AFI, which is to prevent interference with the drug testing program. And the evidence as it came out at trial was that these specific products could not interfere with the drug testing program.
So, again, let me see if I understand what you're saying. Let's assume that there are some hemp seed products that would cause positives, and then there are other hemp seed products, let's say the kind bars, that would not cause a positive. Are you saying that, therefore, in order to have a lawful, valid military purpose in this AFI, that it would have to be tailored in such a way to say you can't consume hemp seed products that cause positives, but you can consume other products such as kind bars?
And Your Honor, going back to the answer to Senior Judge Brown's question, there are ways that this could be appropriately tailored in perhaps accepting out these commercially produced, FDA-regulated products would be one way to accomplish that. But what Deischer actually says is Deischer discusses the need for a specific set of words under specific circumstances. And that's what we're faced with in this case. The military judge took the specific facts of this case as they were presented according to experts and found as a matter of law that to the extent this regulation prohibits the consumption of legal food stuff, which is FDA regulated, it is unlawful.
Okay, so the government, the appellee's position is to the degree the order prohibits lawful products, consumption of commercially available lawful products, that alone makes the order, at least as applied here, an unlawful order or an invalid duty, if you will.
Your Honor, that it would be overbroad and that the military judge, the question here is whether the military judge applied the correct law. And in conducting this analysis of whether the specific facts of this case provided an adequate basis for the lawfulness of this order, the military judge reasonably found that they did not. Relying on that correct law based on the facts that came out at trial, it was not an abuse of discretion for him to dismiss the specification.
All right. Thank you very much, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May you begin.
Your Honor, just to start off, the standard in this case is not an abuse of discretion. The standard review is de novo because lawfulness of an order is a question of law that this court's review, and the review is de novo. So, and this court, going to Senior Judge Brown's initial question of, you could find that all the military judge's findings of facts were not clearly erroneous. The problem is that it was legal error in this case. His legal conclusions were wrong. Granted, the government has argued that some of them are clearly erroneous, but even if you don't find that some of the findings of fact are, it's still legal error because his conclusions, his opinions, and his end result, those are not findings of fact. Those are his opinions and conclusions of law, and that is reviewed de novo. Kind of stepping back into a kind of a bigger picture, there are a lot of questions about the AFI. If you rephrase the AFI, orders are required to be clear and specific. And if the Air Force had just banned, you cannot consume any THC, any product containing any THC, which is what the DEA used to do. If you look at Appellate Exhibit 28, DEA used to just ban all products containing THC. The Air Force could do that, and that would be it would be easy to say, like, obviously, they're just banning products that contain THC, but that doesn't really help in this situation because it's hard to know nowadays because of how marijuana is sold and the fact that states are legalizing it. That would not be a clear order because kind bars don't have on their ingredient labels that THC is included, though the record clearly reflects that THC is included in the kind bars. So the order is actually clear and specific because it bans hemp seeds, which is a substance that carries the THC, which is what the Air Force is getting at banning.
Were hemp seeds listed as an ingredient on this particular product?
Yes, they were, Your Honor.
So someone turning the label over and looking at the ingredients would have been able to ascertain that there was something that they hadn't had the AFI with them when they went into the shop at was in fact banned by the AFI?
Yes, Your Honor. And photographs, I believe at least the original photographs are, you can see the ingredients. And Senior Judge Brown was also correct in noting that in highlighting the military judge actually found three reasonable concerns regarding hemp seeds that actually enforced the reasonableness, the connection to military purpose of the of this AFI. And counsel argues that DSHR stands for the proposition that somehow there's a burden shift in this case, but DSHR was all about, and the holding of DSHR was that the jury does not decide the lawfulness of the order. It's the military judge's duty to do that. That's what the holding in DSHR was all about. But interestingly enough, and the military judge in this case was wrong because he shifted the burden to the government to put on evidence that these things haven't happened or the probability of them occurring. But if you look to the ruling by our Superior Court in Pageant, which had to do with an order not to have a relationship with a minor, the court specifically noted that the commander did not have to know that illegal conduct had occurred or even would occur for the order to be legal and valid. It was enough that the commander had concern and there was a valid military purpose, and that connection was there with ordering him not to have a relationship with a minor. The commander didn't need to know. So in other words, the Air Force doesn't need to know that for sure these things are happening for the order to be valid.
What's your position on when and under what circumstances the military judge has to make an affirmative finding on lawfulness?
When the question of the lawfulness of the order is raised by the defense of the accused in that case. And it needs to be made, as far as the question of timing, it should be raised prior, obviously, to the introduction of evidence, because it's a fundamental question about the order itself, before the government puts on evidence of the order to the members. And it's a question the military judge is to decide, and not the military members. So it needs to be raised prior to putting evidence on at trial.
And I guess the question, and you've raised the issue in form of waiver, what if that doesn't occur? Is that problematic? Can there be waiver when, if a military judge determines, and let's assume he determines correctly, whatever that means, that a given order is in fact unlawful, or is in law unlawful, is waiver really applicable to that? Or is it a situation where, if not raised by the military judge at a certain point, even if the military judge now recognizes that he or she erroneously didn't address it earlier, does the military judge no longer have the ability after, say, the findings have come out to address it, even though on direct appeal it may be something that an appellate court, such as this court, can deal with? Is there a point of time that just – the argument seemed to be, to a certain degree as well, you know, hey, lawfulness is always an issue for the appellate courts to resolve, so therefore the military judge can deal with it at any time. Is that necessarily true? And I know your time's expired, but I'd like you to address
it. And, Your Honor, obviously the military judge should have some discretion on his ability to find good cause for why a motion wasn't raised earlier regarding lawfulness. Perhaps something comes up in the middle of trial about the lawfulness or testimony goes a different way. So there should be some discretion for the military judge to find good cause for failing to raise that motion. But if you get to the point, at this case at least, that there were findings entered on the record as to the allegations, if there's no good cause shown for why it was not raised, then it is absolutely waived. And a lot of the times when the court addresses this and finds waiver, it's because defense has specifically failed to raise that issue. They failed to put that as a matter. They were attacking the order on other grounds and did not put that forward as one of their the reasons for why it was not be violated. I'm trying to think, too, Your Honor, with regard to being able to raise constitutional challenges of overbreadth, of whether or not those can be raised. And you can waive constitutional issues, and appellate courts will not review them because they were failed to be raised at a lower level as well. So the idea that this is somehow never waived and not waivable is incorrect, especially when we're not even talking about a constitutionally protected action. You're talking about ingestion of a food substance that's not constitutionally protected.
I'm sorry. And I guess it raises the issue that we often struggle with is, you know, the term waiver is sometimes used generically, when, as I'm sure you're aware, there's a difference between forfeiture, failing to raise something, and waiver, which is actually more narrowly tailored. What do you see this case? Do you see this as a forfeiture case where they failed to waive it, or failed to raise it, or waiver where they made a conscious and knowing abandonment of a known right?
Waiver, Your Honor, and conscious and knowing because they used the fact of the existence of the AFI as a defense to acquit him of the knowing use of marijuana. So there was a conscious decision to use the AFI to their advantage during the course of the trial, and only after the fact of being found guilty of the AFI did they raise it. That's a knowing waiver because you're using the existence of the AFI to your advantage in the trial.
So defense actually had a different take of the record. And defense, my understanding is that they said, nope, that wasn't the strategy to use these kind bars as an instant ingestion, as all this other stuff. You just said the exact opposite, which you believe the defense strategy was to use this stuff. How did the defense use these kind bars as a defense in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. And specifically, they questioned the expert regarding butter or oil containing hemp seeds. So there's a direct reference to the AFI. And right after that line of questioning, they state there's a reason for the existence of the AFI. The AFI actually bans. In other words, they specifically named the AFI. And then in closing argument, they make kind of a generalized argument regarding that it's not up to the defense, it's not up to us to prove that Major Pugh used, got this, in other words, tested positive for THC, from this product, or how somehow the kind bars caused him to do that. We're not arguing that today. So there was this argument like, listen, it's not our burden to do this. We don't have to prove to you what product he ate or any of these products, because they had previously listed a litany of different products containing varying levels of THC. And it's not up to them to show what product it was or somehow the kind bars caused them to do that. It wasn't their burden to do that. And that was in closing.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And counsel for both sides, thank you for your arguments. We will render a decision in due course. Court is closed.
All rise.